No, 80s culture was all very repeatable stuff. So they would grab one thing, and if it made enough cultural relevance, it would hit it two or three or four more times. It was the age of advertising, and everything had to be repeated over and over.
Jonathan McQuaid, are you trying to mansplain me? Hey, applauders. You've made it to February. Welcome to the month of love. My name is Naomi McQuaid, and I'm here with my co-host,
Lydia Malcolm. Don't know where that came from. Sorry.
It came from the glory above. Welcome to Shocked and Applaud.
Cue music.
I spent many, many hours doing the music that you know, but should know by now, cues before the intro.
I do know. It's going to be like, and then there were boobs, and I was really upset about it, and boobsity boobs, boobs, boobs. And then it'll be like, and then it'll be like, and then it'll launch into,
to be fair, I was the one who brought up the intro, so I like that's
you.
On me.
No, I'm into it. Hey, applauders, you made it to February. Good job. I bet you've done things, upheld resolutions, and I would like to welcome you to this, the sixth episode of Shocked and Applaud. I'm Naomi McQuaid.
And I'm Lydia Malcolm.
And you looked at the link, but now you're here, and we're going to review Earth Girls Are Easy. Microphone pick up the dun 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 from upstairs. Here's the thing, applauders. I picked a completely different movie for the month of February. But upon consulting with my co-host, we decided that maybe some of the shenanigans of the main stars of that film, we didn't need to put in your laps today. We decided that we were going to cover the epic 1989 film, Earth Girls Are Easy, which I have alternately dubbed Sexy Aliens and How to Seduce Them.
My note is Aliens in Space. Oh, sorry. Aliens in Space. And then Alien Porn. Oh, sorry. That's how the movie starts. Sorry. There was a theme song.
Okay. So if we want to just, well, here's the thing. Normally we don't just jump in. But here's the problem. This movie came out in 89. I was maybe 6. I did not watch this film. However, one of the songs from the film was sang to me repeatedly throughout my entire childhood, which is, I'm a blonde, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm a blonde, da, 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 da.
You know what's interesting about that song?
Tell me.
The first time I heard it was in an anime music video, or AMV for you AMV nerds, where it was just pretty much that song set to different blondes in animes. And I remember watching it because it had Sailor Moon in it. I'm just like, yes, it's Sailor Moon, so I have to watch this. And I appreciate that song on some levels.
Look,
it's
what
self-aware.
You mean, it's okay. It's tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
It was inserted into the film after production.
Right.
They recorded it after production.
No place in the film. No reason for it to be in the film.
Michael McKean says it should be there, and so it should be there, but well after the fact. So what we should start out with is I was 6, so I didn't know anything about this movie really until later, and then it was just that it was kind of out there as a thing that existed when I was young, and that one blonde song, and that's really it until we were like, the movie I picked was a little like, do we need to unpack this actor who's got some shenanigans going on? And I was like, maybe not. And then one day, smack upside the head, I was like, Earth Girls Are Easy. Let's do it. And Lydia was like, I'm on board.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, I had heard of it in passing. I had seen only one YouTube video that reviewed it, but it was a fun YouTube video. It was by one of my favorite YouTubers, Lindsay Ellis, back in her Nostalgia Chick days.
Okay, and then I sent you a link to the trailer, and you were like, let's go. And I was like, let's go. And then I watched it a day ago, and I was like, oh no, what have I done?
It's Okay, so I know that I said that one of my first, that my first note was aliens in space. It really wasn't. It was to tie it to the last movie. This movie knows what it is and is unashamed. It came to the magic mirror gate and stepped right on through without missing a beat.
That's our connection.
Yeah, it's the only real connection because I don't think we have any other connection to the Neverending Story.
Oh, there is. I will tell you if you want to know. I'll tell you when we get to the dream sequence.
Oh, yay. Okay.
Sexy okay. Aliens and How to Seduce Them. It got a 66% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That is a better title than the movie name, Sexy Aliens and How to Seduce Them.
Oh, right.
Oh, that's great.
So okay, let's jump right in. Take your shoes off. Take your socks off. Roll those socks up. Put them in your shoes. Sit them to the side because we're about to jump into the stream of this business.
Also, take off your shirt because there's a lot of shirtlessness.
We'll do a count at the end.
Yes. Naomi kept track of everything.
Well, let me show them to our producer.
That many shirtless men, or that many times that men have been shirtless?
Shirtless men in the movie.
Yeah, but like, is it Jeff Goldblum over and over and over again?
No, I was if they've taken their shirt off, I only counted it as one.
One shot per scene, so.
Even if they changed locations, if it was the same costume, I left it. I need new, fresh nudity.
This is from a very repressed time in 1980s Hollywood when everybody got their taste of sexuality and nudity from film still. You didn't have the internet. Mm-hmm. And so slightly provocative Gina Davis on screen was pretty much the best you could do at 12 years older.
I was six. That means you were eight.
So this would have, it certainly would have been out of our scope for that kind of stuff.
Your mother would never let you watch this movie.
No. This was something that would have shown up late night on like Showtime or something like that.
Some Skinamax. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Look, let's go to the opening sequence. Let's just jump right in because the thing is, we all saw the preview, right, and we assume that the viewing audience saw the preview. But when you launch in, it's this very 1950s, not only because of the shape and style of the starship that we look at, but does it go interior then exterior? Did we just show the exterior shot and then we go into the credits?
We go exterior and then interior for a little bit. Because I know that one of the first things they show as far as characters go is the sleeping Jeff Goldblum.
Who doesn't look like him. I thought he looked like Emperor Palpatine.
There you go.
Hardcore. I was like, who is that guy?
Right. And then Damon Wayans is like going all fruit ninja while Jim Carrey is trying to
fix a video box of some kind. It's got a lady inside that he's trying to let free so he can dance with her hologram.
Mm-hmm. Or something with her hologram. And then we get.
I appreciate the wire work because, you know, they didn't like now. Sometimes they'll take an actor up in an airplane and like have them do 3D shots. Yeah. When they fly through the air and they can only do like a 360 in one direction and they float from left to right and that's all they've got.
That's right. Damon Wayans like does something to his belt and then he's like anti-gravity man.
I think they should have been anti-gravity the entire time.
Right. That would have been cool.
That would have been amazing.
But then we get a theme song, which is conveniently titled Earth Girls Are Easy.
I believe Jim Carrey's character says, I need a woman in Alienese before they cut to the entrance.
Yeah, well, there is a lot before the theme song. They say they're it's obvious that they're wanting something. They're wanting some sex.
They've been in space a long time.
Yeah.
They need to let loose. Yeah, he says, "I need a woman," and then my notes go, "Enter porn / theme song," which is a Julie Brown song from 1984 called "Earth Girls Are Easy." Roll credits.
Right. Oh, don't they like at one point? No, that's later on. I'm jumping ahead. Lydia, this is Lydia, by the way, jumping ahead.
Naomi McCoy doesn't mind that at all because here's the thing. We get a whole bunch of pinups and robots and aliens and it's just a very pretty intro. I give zero fault to the intro.
There's a woman with rockets flying through space.
There's a chick trying to get eaten by a mini tentacled thing. There's video headed robot guys walking through that like turn and look at face camera, which is the only fourth wall break, by the way, where it's like Damon Wayans.
And then it's like a male and a man and woman with like, which, okay. So I know I gave you the comic Saga at one point. You probably haven't read it because that comic actually takes place in space. And one of the main characters is like a robot with a television for a head.
That sounds like Furikuri, which is an anime me and my dad like.
Oh, yeah, that is in there. So this was before Saga, before Furikuri, there was Earth Girls Are Easy, at least in this theme song, because they have like TV headed people.
This is the Julie Brown that ends up playing the friend.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And she sings the song as well.
Mm-hmm.
Does she sing the song?
I believe so.
Okay.
I think they just cut it from Goddess, whatever the heck.
That intro and the whole intro really is kind of an homage to early 50s and 60s sci-fi. I mean, there's a lot of sort of interpretive of pulling out old aged sci-fi. It's this, the film itself seems very self-aware.
Well, it's definitely a pulp novels is what I thought the image came from, like pinups / pulp novels, and then the sci-fi of the early 50s into the 60s. Just visually, it flows across those things. As much as I want to give gold stars, glitter, and like just all of the shiny accoutrement that is worthy of that kind of intro, we cut to Gina Davis having passed out in bed with her
veil on her face.
Yeah, her whole like bridal stuff. I mean, like, I've been married one time, but Jonathan's never found me passed out with all my bride stuff around me that I was like, oh no, you can't see this. You can't see my veil. You can't see my dress. I was asleep and you said you were going to be home. Blah, 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 blah.
What I thought was interesting is she was asleep like Jeff Goldblum. The two romantic characters were asleep when we first meet them.
Oh, they're both unconscious. I didn't even think about that. Jeff Goldblum was suspended while the Ziploc and
Weeblow?
Whiplock and
Whiplop
and Zebop. Hold on, I wrote it down. Hold on, it's a whole page away.
Ziploc and Windex.
That's not right. Oh no, that's where I rate their bodies. Hold on. Zebo and Whiplock.
Right.
They're like bouncing around, but Mac is in his little containment unit. And then you're saying that Mac, who is suspended by two visible wires, according to the internet, is similar to Gina Davis, sleeping in her bed, covered in her own wedding junk.
Right. I think it was an interesting moment, considering, like, these are the two.
I did not even think about the parallel. Mm-hmm. Sorry to step on that for you.
You're okay. That was my note. I mean, I didn't do anything about that intro, though. You guys were, like, on top of that intro. I didn't have any notes about that intro, so we're good.
I love the intro, but here's the thing. It's cartoons, and I'm going to be totally into that.
Right.
God help us if we ever do Who Framed Roger Rabbit, because I'm going to be like, yes! Dumbo appears! Blah! Look at this Bugs Bunny! Blah!
That is a weird movie.
I think my mother-in-law would like us to do that one. But whatever. Here's the thing. Gina Davis, wrapped in her wedding stuff, has completely like lost track of time and fallen asleep because she was waiting on her douchebag fiancé who shows up.
His name's Ted. He's a doctor.
He's a douchebag.
Dr. Douchebag.
And I might refer to him as such.
Yes. And he walks in and he goes directly to the bathroom because saying that he was late because of work.
Aw. ER doctors and their late schedules and never being able to call anybody because even in 1989 you didn't have a freaking phone.
Mm-hmm.
She's got like three phones.
Mm-hmm. They're all novelty. Aren't they like novelty phones?
They're all novelty phones.
Yeah.
But he runs into the bathroom and he's just like, oh, sir, blah, 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 and then uses her concealer, I'm pretty sure, unless he's more of a douche than I even know. He uses her concealer to cover up the hickey on his neck.
He bought concealer for her.
He was like, oh, honey, I can't stand your blemishes. Here, I got you this thing. It's my tone, but I think we spend about as much time in the sun as we
should. And then he like comes in and Gina Davis is like getting everything ready for him, like clearing off the bed.
He thunks himself down on the bed and he like hits his head on the wrought iron that we all dreamed of the filigree white wrought iron kind of bed from the late 80s. And he's like, oh, and she's like, I was fluffing your pillow. It was so cute. Also, I hated it. Like, I've got this duality about myself where I'm like, chick, don't pull the pillow out from behind him. That doesn't make any sense. But also, he hits his head and I'm like, well, he kind of deserved it.
Yeah, I kind of did. And so
what my notes is sleeping on macrame, ew. because they're all lacy pillows of the 80s, and it's not okay. It's not okay, applauders. Don't sleep on lace. That'll just leave a pattern on your face when you wake up.
The more you know. Da, 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 da. Okay.
I would have thought that the bride's veil would have left enough marks in her.
No, it was laying across her like a death shroud. And then she tucks it away real fast when he gets there, and he climbs into bed, and she's got this thick knit lace pillowcase that's kind of like macrame, and he's going to go ahead and sleep on it, but she whips it out of the way real quick, and he gets a satisfying thud.
Yeah, very satisfying.
I think yes. So.
Well, it's nice to see him get like physically hurt after we see him concealing a hickey.
And then she oblivious to everything, and she's oblivious through this entire film. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of nice because it's like a refreshing ditzy, mm-hmm. but she's like, oh, well, let's get it on. And he's like, I can't right now. I'm just so busy with work right now. I'm so asleep.
So tired.
We'll do it tomorrow. And she's like, I'm at the Nail Expo tomorrow.
He's like, oh, no. So sad.
The Nail Expo. He's like, well, the next time, I promise. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, jerk.
Mm-hmm. And then from there, we see her going to her job, which is at a nail salon.
Well, she is like, okay, I guess we'll do it next time. Yeah. And I call her the I'll do anything to make it work woman.
It seems to me like the writers felt like she can't get away with doing what she's doing because she's got an appointment doing something. You just add expo to pretty much any profession to say you got this thing you got to do. Mm-hmm. You could say that for anything.
Oh, man. I work at the Frito-Lay's factory. I have that grinding up corn and making it into chips expo.
Exactly. The Spam Expo, you know, you we discuss all the different meats that go in.
You gotta network, guys. I'm just saying.
Would you not go to the Fabuloso Expo as a house cleaner?
No, but I would definitely go to a Pine Sol Expo.
Name brand!
I would go to the Pledge Expo.
Oh, I like how you upper crust me on that
one. Yeah, yeah. Like that antibacterial Pledge dusting spray. That's great. You can clean keyboards with that. And then you're just like, oh, you don't have to worry about, you know, getting sick because I'll clean your mouse for you.
Okay, I'll give you that. But here's the deal. Here's what we cut to. She's pulling into work the next day.
Mm-hmm.
She's got an in-car hair dryer she's using to dry her nails.
She is a professional. She has got that on lockdown.
This is a woman of the 80s.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't have a hair dryer in the 80s in my car. What?
You didn't have a car.
Okay. Technically, I was 6 when this came out. But my mom, she trained me as an American to, like, turn on the air blasters on high, heat on high, wet hair, blast you in the face. That's as high tech as we got. You just dread it in the car. You can't see me motioning that I'm drying my hair with, like, an imaginary hair. But I'm like, shh.
You look like you're shampooing your hair from here.
But that's what you do when you got fine hair. You gotta wiggle it out.
My note was that she stopped driving to dry her nails. So I feel like it's just a message saying drive safe.
She really should. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of unsafe driving in this film.
Yeah. Yeah, my note is works at a hair salon or nail salon, owns a convertible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's got a lot going for her. Yeah. I mean, she's got a nice house that he's like, it's my house, but yeah. It's her house.
I mean, she kicks him out, so maybe her name is on the lease.
That's co-dwelling and rules, and I don't know what California's like.
Yeah.
But she goes into the curl up and die, and applauders, we're gonna start a couple different polls on our Facebook page, starting... Jonathan doesn't know yet, but we need every time a place is called curled up and die in a movie... Because this is only number one, but it's reoccurring. Like, in a bunch of movies, there's a place called the Curl Up and Die. And this, I think, we should mark as number one for us.
Okay.
But if you join our pages on Patreon, if you join us on shocksandapplaud.com, there'll be a poll. You could write it down. Where's another time you saw Curl Up and Die? Because every screenwriter thinks they came up with that. And they did not.
I did not see that. So it was, like, on a building?
Well, yeah, it's the salon she works at.
Huh.
The Curl Up and Die. But that might also be in Roseanne.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe it's in Steel Magnolia. All right. But there'll be a poll. Please post where you've seen Curl Up and Die.
I did not see that at all. What I did see was her multicolored overalls and her top hat with no top. Her hair is sticking out of the top of it.
That's no way to avoid hat hair.
I know.
That's no way to avoid hat hair. She's going to have hat hair. It's just going to be all in the front.
But it's a top hat with no top, and I kind of just like it for that one idea.
I'm not against it.
Yeah. But it's showing that she is eclectic, and she's also really nice because she helps a little old lady come out of her salon.
Agreed.
And then the old lady said something about,
that door's a
so cute. I like it when old people swear.
She's like, I'm so sorry I missed your appointment, miss whatever your face. I'm just like, but you look so good today. And she's like, thank you so much. That door's a because she couldn't get her walker through it.
It was great. It
was Did anyone else notice the subliminal messaging in the flashing neon sign in the window?
No.
No. I can't remember what, if it was like a body part or something, but it's a normal word. And then one of the letters is flashing on and off. And if it's off, then it reads as something naughty. I don't remember what it is.
Please go to shockedandapplaud.com and tell us what the crap we're missing in the films we're trying to review.
Okay. I think that just is telling of this movie. We are just so like,
are you being tongue in cheek right now? Are you being self-aware right now? Or are you so deep into the ball sack of the 80s?
Are you asking me or the movie?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know. Like, there are moments in this movie that I'm just kind of like, this is a movie. This is a movie that exists. And I don't find the movie as a whole super entertaining, but there's a lot of little things in this movie that make me just kind of want to dive in a little bit deeper.
It felt like walking through an arcade. Mm-hmm. There's just so much light and flash and so many things that could draw my attention. Mm-hmm. But 100 minutes later, I'm on the other side of the arcade and I still have like 3 out of 4 quarters.
That is a perfect explanation of this movie.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. She goes in, she sits down with her friend, Gina. I never get the names right. Gina Davis sits down with Julie Brown. She's just like, Julie Brown's like, how'd it go? Yeah. Nail shot number 5 or whatever.
She's like, you're late. What's
the cause? Yeah. Dr. Douchebag.
And Val is like, well, it was just, I was up late with Ted. And
she's like, all right.
And she's like, no, he didn't put out. So it's like, so her best friend's named Candy and Gina Davis, which you can totally call Gina Davis.
Thank you.
Her character's name is Val. And so Candy's just like, Val, how long has it been?
2 weeks.
2 weeks?
What? Now, here in the breadth of experience, how is 2 weeks a dry spell?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. For me, 2 weeks is not a dry spell. For the average American married couple, from the statistics I've read, and I've read an unfortunate amount, 2 weeks ain't bad.
Mm-mm. I don't know. Maybe this is the joke.
Every young person who hears about this is like, oh, I can't believe you're not constantly having sex.
I know.
Like this guy that's cheating on you.
Right.
Oh, she's like, oh, that pissed me off when Gina Davis is like, what'll break this dry streak? And Julie Brown's like, another woman. And Gina Davis is like, well, let me try to do that better.
That was good. That was good. they go into.
Don't go to the nail. Don't go to the nail expo. Mm-hmm. Get a makeover and diddle that man hardcore.
Right.
Because your emotional issues can be fixed with a makeover, which you'd never thought of. You work in a freaking salon.
Right. Right. But then it goes into this like it's the first musical number inside the actual movie. This is not the theme song. This is like a musical number.
I think it's called Brand New Girl, but I faked it. I just wrote down what I thought it was called.
Right. It was the makeover song. That's really all that is.
That's true.
And so they go through this whole song and making over Gina Davis, and she has like all these different. Here's the thing. I thought Gina Davis looked fine in the top hat with no top. I mean,
she's obviously gorgeous and upkept.
Right. Right.
They say that he didn't like you because you look like Doris Day. But can I just tell you that in her time, Doris Day was fine AF.
Mm-hmm.
People loved her.
Right.
Be about Doris Day. But I do love during this dance sequence. Now, there's this whole dance sequence and there's like the curl up and dye dancers mentioned in the credits. And blah, 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 blah. But I love a slideshow of different looks. And there's Gina Davis as like this noir chick. And there's this her as like a dominatrix. And there's her as like this glamour, fancy lady. And I love a dressing up montage. I love a different looks montage, and this song delivered.
Mm-hmm.
I give it full points. But at one point while they're dyeing her hair, I don't know if you're ready to move on from the song. I have 8 pages of notes on it.
Just on this one song?
This just one song. Okay. At one point, they have her laying down, and they're dancing around her and singing and whatever, but the towel they have on her. Oh, yeah.
Yes, that was so great. They had these, like, pasty nipples over her boobs.
They had nipples on the towel!
It was so great.
They were plastic nipples on a towel.
Yeah. So at the end of this, you know, musical dance number that is wonderful, you said you had 8 pages. Do you want to?
No, I just, how long has she worked there?
That's a good point. It's kind of like ambiguous because
she's not the owner. The owner is the chick who comes by later in the film when, I'll tell you when the owner is there, but okay. She's only in like one noticeable moment of the film. When I was reading the, IMDb page, mm-hmm. and they were like, they were giving quotes, and one of the quotes is owner of the salon. And I'm like, we don't meet her before that. We don't talk to her well after that. This chick does not exist except for this one moment in time. So like, how long has she been there that she can just have a makeover whenever she wants?
Maybe it's a perk of the job. I
want to work in a salon then.
Yeah. Okay. Then any salons out there looking to hire Naomi, I've cleaned with her. She's really good at sweeping. So long as
I'm a little compulsive.
So long as she gets free makeovers, mm-hmm. I think you can go ahead and just pay her pennies on the
let's
dollar.
Let's cut to Dr. Douchebag's chateau. Because yeah. You know he probably calls it something super douchey like chateau.
Well, it does call himself Dr. Love later in the scene.
Oh my god. My notes say at this point, she is impossibly thin with impossibly fantastic boobs.
You can count each and every one of her ribs.
Right in her chest. Mm-hmm. There was a thing in the 80s where like between Ripley and Alien and Gina Davis and
Earth Girls Are Easy.
She's like, thung, 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 thung. Like you could wash your laundry. On their breastbone.
Was Gina Davis an Alien?
No.
Okay. But you had said between Aliens
Sigourney Weaver in Aliens has the chest, like seeing your ribs through your boob plate.
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she's got this like cute little blonde bob as a wig that's on. It's not a wig?
No. Here's the thing. She became a blonde and then in the next scene, mm-hmm. you will find her dyeing her hair back brown.
Oh, thank you for noticing.
I did notice because mm-hmm. as a bottle blonde myself, mm-hmm. I'm literally blonde, but I'm a redhead right now, but I've been every color of the rainbow. Like how often you change your hair color really distracts me.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. But until the aliens come in, all of this drags for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, the fact that she's blonde and like she's like, I'm gonna win my man back. She got a whole book, which I call the Being Disappointed Checklist.
It's pretty much how to drive men crazy.
Yeah, she's trying to do all of these things succinctly so that when he comes home, she's gonna be like, oh, I'm just this woman who just happens to be at your house, but also you know me because I'm Gina Davis, also Valerie. And you just, everything, oh, I have food over here for us. Oh, like, I've come with some fancy outfit on. Oh, like, she's this whole routine set up. And as a person who doesn't mind a dramatic production, like, when it falls flat, and it's fallen flat on occasion.
Is this like a 3.5 wall break? Because she's really talking to a character, but she's talking to the camera.
She is talking directly to the camera.
Yes, but it's not as a person. It's as a fake person.
Mm-hmm.
She's going through this little script that she wants to play with Dr. Douchebag, but...
I mean, this is technically a musical. You can get away with a lot of talking into the camera with mm-hmm. a musical.
We get that she's play acting, though. It comes across pretty clear, pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
And then she sets the lamp on fire with some perfume. Please refer to the film for that.
Before she does that, though, she's like listing out the different things. And my only note about the stuff she listed out is that she talks about sensual oil and then she holds up a bottle of Wesson cooking oil.
Okay. But even the mom Brady, whatever her name was, has made jokes. I mean, I think she's passed now, but she's like, she holds up and she's like, I mean, the whole thing was, let me show you what I can do with a bottle of Wesson oil. And like, it used to be an ad in the 70s.
Oh, really?
And then it was like a thing in the 80s. And then like in the late 80s, Gina Davis is like, yeah, let's pour it over. Let's get some. You know, Wesson oil is a vegetable oil, right?
Mm, I did not know.
Vegetable oil, they call it that because the seed they use, they don't want to say the name of because it'll turn people off of using that oil. It's rapeseed.
Oh.
Yeah. 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 Oh, I have some delicious palm frites I made for you. I cooked them in
rapeseed oil.
Oh, is there like an actual fruit?
Look, somebody's going to comment on the thing. They're going to be like, canola oil. It's made out of like, it's made out of like cottonseed or.
Okay.
A common cooking oil is rapeseed oil, but people don't like the word.
She goes ahead and.
Forage on, Malcolm. Forage on.
We're walking out of this conversation.
She breaks a lamp.
She breaks a lamp with what is it? Perfume.
Yes.
It tells her to like put a little bit of a spritz of perfume on your lamp. And it's going, if you don't have any incense, then try spritzing a light bulb with some perfume.
Mm-hmm.
And so
she gets it wrong, guys.
She does not spritz.
She's like, spritz, spritz. Maybe that's not enough. Unscrews the top. Pours a half an ounce on a hot light bulb. Firefighter daughter in me is like, girl, that's stupid. That's mostly alcohol on a super hot bulb.
That being said, she does put it out with the whipped cream nearby. And I noted she's very resourceful. So I started checking out the times where she's pretty resourceful in this movie.
Oh, did you?
Well, I didn't actually like, I noted it. I didn't like do an actual like,
I'm the only one who tallied some stuff at the end, but I don't feel like listing it until we get to the end of the film.
Right.
Okay, good for you, Gina Davis. You heard him come home. You're like, I gotta make this sexy and surprise. I just busted this lamp with some whipped cream. I bet some perfume. I better like, she rips it out of the wall and she drags it into the closet where she shuts herself in her fancy little lingerie.
It looks really good on her. Like her whole outfit though in the scene.
She's got stockings. She's got garter belt. She has corset. She has bra. She has fancy hair. She's like painted in her mole, which is always super sexy. She looks amazing in this in this scene.
Right. And but of course, douchebag doctor, Dr. Douchebag, comes home with dun dun dun. Another woman. I can't read it from here.
No, I'll let Jonathan read it on the mic.
Comes home with a floozy.
Yeah, he does. I'm sorry. I'm sure she has a couple redeeming. The lady he brings home seems like she's not in on it.
Right.
But I do classify her as a floozy just because she's like, oh, a doctor I work with and he wants to do it with me. I guess I better do it with this doctor who wants to do it with me.
See, now she doesn't seem too like turned off by the fact that her boss is essentially like a man in a powerful position is, you know, interested in her. Mm-hmm. And she does not seem like she finds that. Like, it's a bad thing.
It seems like a step up in a number of ways when you're underneath that. It's like,
I love the face you're making right now. You look like a Muppet.
It isn't my Muppet face. It's my Muppet thinking face. Here's the thing. If you're climbing a mountain, she's at the base camp.
Right.
He's not the mountain. He's just a couple sites up from you. But here's the problem. Gina Davis is like one more side up from you. So like if you're climbing a mountain, she's at the bottom and she's like, oh, he's so far up. And Gina Davis is like, he ain't that far up.
Cause she knows him.
Sorry, mountain climbing metaphors.
But she doesn't seem like it's like she probably doesn't know that he's about to get married.
She doesn't even know he has a girlfriend, let alone a fiance. And here's my problem with this scene. Gina Davis is in the closet, which is one of those slat closets from all of the films we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And she's like, she's got her hand over her mouth. She's like, oh, this is going to be so funny. Oh my goodness. It's going to be so funny. Right? But like, he's like, hey baby, I'm going to go do a thing. And she's like, oh, okay. That sounds so great. And I'm like, Gina, how do you not hear this guy?
Right.
She doesn't hear either of them.
Her character comes across as oblivious from time to time.
Well, I like the Daffy part of her, but Daffy doesn't equal deaf.
Right. It's like maybe if she does hear it, it doesn't like hit her that maybe it's another woman there.
I wrote, cat's pissed, me too.
Right.
The cat's like,
and he goes in and he starts like taking, he goes into the bedroom. And
no, he goes into the bathroom.
He goes into the bathroom and he starts taking a bunch of different, all of Gina Davis's stuff, and he just throws it right into the toilet.
Why does he throw it in the toilet? It's too big to flush.
That's why I kind of say this movie's a bit self-aware.
Oh, man. Okay, here's the thing. Okay. Gina Davis jumps out of the closet at one point and grabs this poor woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, I'm ready to, like, make sweet love to you in a surprise. Oh, she says to herself, I'm so embarrassed. I don't know why. I love the innocence of Gina Davis. She's mm-hmm. like, I'm just so sorry that I scared you. I just didn't know what was going. She's not accusatory of the woman. She's just like, oh, I didn't mean to startle you.
She does not think that this woman is here for banging purposes for her fiance.
Out steps Dr. Love.
Okay. So the shot is the two women like that are both on the floor, like kneeling, talking to each other.
Blonde chick, short dress, looking super cute. No glasses. We'll mention that later. She's like, oh my God. Gina Davis to the left of us. She's like super cute, pale pink. I'll reiterate, stockings, garters, corset, bra. She's like all up on it, looking super cute in her brand new blonde hairdo.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dr. Love steps in and he's all.
We see between his legs, the camera is like right. His legs are framing the top of the shot. And then you see Gina Davis and this woman.
Is the stethoscope in the shot?
Yes. And it's specifically positioned. So it's between the two women. But it looks like a dong. So I was like, okay, I'm going to like save that as a wallpaper now.
So right, this is sort of a reverse homage to The Graduate.
That is a good point.
I mean, that's a very deep point in terms of like, of like theatrical reaching.
No, 80s culture was all very repeatable stuff. So they would grab one thing and if it made enough cultural relevance, it would hit it two or three or four more times. It was the age of advertising and everything had to be repeated over and over.
Jonathan McQuaid, are you trying to mansplain me? It's a Graduate reference. Or Mrs. Whatever, Mrs. Robinson, are you trying to seduce me? I said, Jonathan, are you trying to mansplain me? I tried so hard with that joke, it didn't go anywhere.
Do you hear me clapping? Or are you just hiding in a closet?
I'm hiding in a closet with a broken lamp.
Anyway, so when...
Okay, so, wait, Gina Davis snaps out of it. She's like, what the f*** are you doing? You weren't going to have sex with that woman. What? Okay, my favorite part of this entire scene was she's like, you were going to have sex without me? She doesn't... Look. I'm a monogamist. Mm-hmm. I got opinions, right? But if you do you and you're a knowing, conscious adult, I'm not going to be mad at you, right? If you make decisions about your own interpersonal life, I'm not going to yell at you. You and your partner are your business as adults, right? She's only like, you were going to have sex without me, which was like, hey, girl, I got this nurse friend I want to bring in. You down? Me personally? Nah. Thanks, brah. Take it away. But she was like, if you had said something, I probably would have been down with both blondes. Gina Davis is like full blown pissed at this dude.
Yeah.
And I love a woman's rage unleashed. She starts grabbing all the things. When she starts chucking the sushi at him, I'm great. Like, yes, 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 queen.
I pointed out that the best line in any movie I've seen so far is, if you wanted to have meaningless sex, why couldn't you have it with me?
He could have.
Yeah. And she probably would have been down if he had just been like, hey, baby. But no, instead, he goes ahead and is trying to do something. Because, like, I don't know. It's like...
He doesn't know his ass from his elbow. He really doesn't know what he wants. And there is a conundrum in your affianced life where you're like, I'm about to settle down. Do I mean this? Right? Totally. 100%. Understand that he doesn't know where he is, who he is, who she is to him. Maybe this is a fluke, but this is an 80s movie. Gina Davis reigns supreme. We're going to ignore the fact that he probably has some reasonable personality flaws because Dr. Douchebag proves himself later on to not just be this wishy-washy, gosh almighty, I'm going to get married and I don't know what I'm going to do, so I better bang this nurse. He proves himself worse later on. And because of that, the fact that she loses her mind on him, and even then is just like, you were going to have sex without me? Like, just, I want to bring her in. I want to be like, oh, honey, you're more than enough.
Right.
He's just not.
Yeah. And, you know, in that moment, she kicks him out of the house.
Okay, wait.
Yeah, come for
it. Do you remember how she kicks him out of the house?
With a champagne bottle?
Yes, which I call the champagne ejection. She's like, get out! And she shakes up the bottle plate and it's just, get out,
get out, get out, get out. She throws him his keys and he is only in his underwear and a stethoscope and he's got keys to his car. That man does not have his driver's license on him. He doesn't have a credit card.
Suck it, Dr. Dude.
He's going to have to like go to one of his friend's houses and explain the whole thing.
Hey, hey, Cameron, look.
He would have a friend named Cameron.
Sorry. Cameron. Cameron. Valerie kicked me out. Now I don't know why, man. I don't know why. But you better buzz me in. Because I'm in my fruit of the lips. Surgical cap. I got all this cover up on my neck because of this hickey.
I smell like champagne. I don't know why she kicked me out.
Ugh. Oh, but the nosy neighbor sticking her face out with like her little listening antenna.
It's like so obvious she's a nosy neighbor.
Because Mrs. Murphy, you called her?
Yeah, I think what her name
so
is.
So good.
And then we get our second internal musical number.
I call it song cue number two, but it's probably three or four. I don't even know.
Right. And Gina Davis is pretty much just singing about how I gave the best years of my life to you and I trusted you and I'm not going to do that anymore. And it goes through this whole montage of her like destroying Ted stuff.
Let's talk about that montage. Mm-hmm. First, poison the fish with the rest of that champagne.
Yep.
You drink it, you drop it in the tank.
But yeah,
this is the point in the movie where I was like, the nails in this movie. I kind of forgave it up until now, but she's like, fingernails. Mm-hmm. Okay, we go picture smash. We go office wreck. We go pinboard. Oh, the pin. Do you remember those pin boards as a kid? Where like, it's a clear plastic board with four pegs on it and then a black plastic board. And then there's all these pins that never come through because they're blunted on the end. So they can't, you'd do a middle finger in them.
Right. What Gina Davis does is she puts it right on her face and she makes this like scary, like
she's screaming. Face.
She's screaming into it. And then she like you see like her tongue kind of get in there.
She's like, wow.
She puts it down. She puts I think they're cigars in a VHS.
Yeah, she grabs a whole bunch of records and she like tosses them left to right until she gets to a Madonna record and then she throws that one in the fire.
It was a Madonna record. Thank you.
She microwaves the football that represents them getting together in, we've decided,
college? Yeah, okay. So it's also cut up with images. Like at one point, Ted and Val are having a pool party and like she like bumps into him while he's like cooking in a barbecue right next to the pool. Like, dude, come on.
You know you need a 3-foot buffer.
You should not be doing that close to the pool. But he's like right next to it and she just nudges him a little bit and he comedically falls in like one of those like commercials.
Yeah, but they must have taken the picture beforehand because what she's looking at is like a really happy picture of him being like next to the pool.
Right.
Oh, man. Okay, but then she does a very satisfying cologne smash. He has like these glass shells of his cologne and I'm like, guy. Really? Right. And then she smashes him with like, I assume a baseball bat. And
it was a golf club because he's a doctor.
Oh, that's right. You're absolutely right. She like picks up a golf club and she's like, what am I going to do with this? And she saunters into the other room and she's like, a glass shelf full of
glass bottles.
Smash! And then, applauders, she sets up a Home Alone style bullshit machine. She takes a, you know what's up. She takes a pair of skis, puts them against like a mantle or a chair, and then she lays them down into his Commodore.
Commodore 64.
Two skis leading into the Commodore 64. She puts a bowling ball at the top. We are only, look, skis aren't very long. We're 4 feet away. She's like, she holds it and she's like, singing the song. Naomi doesn't know the words to. She lets it go. Smash. Oh, so good.
And as someone in technical support, I will tell you that the best technical support is a heavy metal ball.
You know what? You know what they call one of the phrases Jonathan taught me? He left the room for just a minute. Let's talk smack about him. He taught me.
He won't hear it at all.
He won't hear it till he edits this business. But he told me this thing called. There's going to be a dramatic pause. It's called. Oh, come back to me, words.
Is it software?
It's called. No, it's a way of calibration. It's called,
it's a metaphysical term.
There's actually a German word for it. like how the Fonz hits the jukebox.
Oh.
It's like tectonic calibration, except that's not the word. It's like, it's when you smack something and make it work.
Oh, so it's one of those, like, it's like a word in German that indicates when you smack something, it gets it to work.
Yes.
Okay, so it's not a word that we have in English, and we really need to have a word in English.
There's a clearer way of saying it. I just don't remember what it is.
Mm-hmm. Percussive maintenance.
Percussive maintenance? How did you know?
It's not German.
No, obvious.
Next morning soaps is what I call the next scene.
So there's this TV show. It's a soap opera where a doctor is hitting on his nurse, and the nurse is like, but doctor, what about your wife? And he's like, she's in a coma. She can't love me. And then they're making out right on the wife's
like
bed.
Like right on her body, and then she wakes up. But
yeah, and then he unplugs her.
Oh, no, see, I thought he stabbed her with that needle he had.
I think he was like unplugging like something from her that stopped her from living, and so she just like dramatically dies back on the bed. And Gina Davis is like...
Welcome to the Winter of Love, a plotter. We've been secretly monitoring the feeds from our own satellite of love to bring you our review of this late 80s ladies' B-movie, Birth Girls Are Easy. Hey, this is your audio engineer and recently shaven to appear human, Jonathan, thanking you for taking it easy this February, knowing that there is a Goldblum out there somewhere for all of us. In an ironic twist of fate, Jeff Goldblum would eventually leave this Mac behind, only to revisit that name again as a pre-Justin Long Apple spokesperson in the early part of the millennium. That's right, that Justin Long, who starred in Kevin Smith's Tusk. I'm not even Kittles for Skittles on that one. It's just how dank our own metaverses get. Ready for more? We'll be back in only 1 week for part two of our review of this far-out, wicked-awesome flashback. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.